I'm Rich Sains, and you're listening to the Procurement Conversations Big Conversation. Join me as I talk to procurement leaders and industry specialists about the biggest issues facing our profession. Welcome to the Procurement Conversation. This week, we'll look at why procurement is still largely a digital desert. Although most organisations have P2P systems and ERPs, there's not always investment in systems to support procurement's more strategic role. I'm talking to Jim Townsend, former CPO of Walgreens Boots Alliance. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Rich. Good to be here.
So firstly, does procurement need technology?
Great question. And I think first, if you think about like a simple organisation, then it needs a real basic thing. But as organisations get more complex, I think the question becomes more pertinent. Secondly, what I would say, and this may sound a strange comment, because I'm a real supporter of technology, particularly in the procurement space, but forget the hype. Think about what's actually important to your organization. Then third, I would say, I kind of think the answer sort of depends on the potential value the function can bring. So what I mean by that is where's the function in terms of its maturity path? And, you know, the mission of each organization is not necessarily the same. So, you know, priorities will be different in different organizations, be it sustainability, be it resilience, be it cost, be it compliance, be it cash, be it innovation. All of these things are different and technology plays a different role into that. But what I would say is that all orgs, particularly all large organizations, require the basics of ERP. Most organizations have some form of spend visibility, basic performance tracking of vendors and what have you. And, you know, that sort of seems to be the sort of basis. But, you know, my kind of take, it's about when it's the right time. It's not a question of should it or shouldn't it require technology. It's a matter of how mature is that organization and what's the right time to implement that. And so what I mean by that, Rich, is, you know, if the organization is somewhat immature, then it perhaps needs no further sort of technology investments until it's sort of harvested the low-hanging fruit. And, you know, maybe in the future we'll need that technology to enable it to harvest more fruit. But, you know, I guess the way I would think about it very pragmatically as a CPO is, you know what, you know, if you're in an organization where cost is important and you can easily access maybe $100 million of benefits without investing in tech, why would I want to be distracted at that moment around implementing tech? My role, the team's role, is to land the benefits. It's not to implement the tech. And maybe I get to a point a year or two down the road where I've harvested that value and I need to invest in new tech to enable me to uncover new opportunities and deliver against those. Or maybe I've got some unique business opportunities where technology enables me to make the most of those opportunities. You know, so I think my kind of point is kind of invest where the money's at or where the criticality's at, not where the curiosity is at. So it's about timing and when the right moment to invest is. It's about knowing what to invest in, and it's about not getting distracted when you need to focus on other matters.
I suppose that's a great point. There's a lot of things on procurement's desk. And actually, as a CPO, you want to be targeting those two, three big things that tip the needle. And actually, it may be that tech's just not one of those. You, as you say, if it's about savings, if it's about sustainability agenda, diverse suppliers, whatever it is, those might be your focuses. As you say, the tech can be extremely distracting, and there's a big human element to it as well, isn't there? All that change management, changing your ways of working.
Yeah, no, exactly. So I'm a big believer in tech, but I'm a big believer in tech at the right point in the cycle. And you need to pick your moment carefully and don't be swayed by those viewpoints and opinions which say, you know, tech's the answer to everything, because it absolutely isn't. Getting the basics right is the basis of everything. And once you've got the basics right, that's a real great foundation to invest on top of.
Definitely. And for those teams that are ready to invest, why do you think it's a struggle to make a business case for tech within those functions and get IT resources to prioritize procurement?
Yeah, it's a real great question. I think it's one that many organizations struggle with. I think fundamentally, all organizations compete for sort of capital investment, and you're competing with other functions for that funding. And really, you know, if you look at it from an investment perspective, companies are kind of, and exec teams within companies are saying, well, shall we invest in the customer offering? Shall we invest in product design? Well, maybe we'll invest in procurement. And what's likely to have the greatest return? That's kind of part of the challenge. And one needs to be mindful of that when making the pitch for that investment. If you lowball what the returns are going to be, and if you play down the benefits of it, you're probably going to get shunted to the back of the queue. Whereas if you're ambitious for what can be achieved, then that kind of puts you in a much more competitive space. So that's one kind of real key point. Secondly, I would say often procurement isn't influential within the exec teams. And if that's a situation, you need to figure out how you're going to create that influence. Encourage those that perhaps don't understand your world of procurement in the way that you do to understand what those opportunities are. You know, if you are influential with the exec teams, clearly it's much easier because often that's a conversation with the CPO, CSO, CEO, Chief Operating Officer, whoever it be, to help them understand the benefits of the investment. And if you've already got a track record of delivery and they believe in you as an individual and as a team, winning over their hearts and minds is much easier. The other thing I would say is quite often organizations think that procurement benefits are kind of smoke and mirrors. There's some kind of set of numbers that aren't to believe that they often can't find within the P&L or the balance sheet. And I think you have to do what you can to dispel that and show absolute clear line of sight to what those benefits are that you have delivered and that you are going to deliver in terms of the future investment. And I guess a couple of other points that are kind of on my mind. One is that procurement technology seems to have a propensity to focus more on the enablement and foundational rather than those things that truly add value. So if you've got a solution which is delivering real value and it's directly attributable to, I don't know, maybe the P&L, the balance sheet, or maybe your sustainability performance, or maybe real clear, significant compliance risks that you have, then it's much easier to get funding for that. And once you've got that funding and you've kind of secured that, then typically most functions or IT teams will kind of prioritize that in line with what's been approved. There's no organizations I've worked with where IT have a right to decide what's priority and what's not. It's simply decided by the exec teams and based on what the returns are. So does that kind of help, Rich?
It does, yeah. I mean, would you say there's been a number of false dawns within procurement technology as well? So by that, I mean, yeah, I guess solutions that have overpromised and under-delivered over the last sort of 15, 20 years, and maybe some custom solutions that have been built to solve niche problems. And then there's this whole sunk cost fallacy of we've invested a load of money here and it hasn't delivered, so maybe we won't do it again.
Yeah, I think so. But I would argue that we're pretty foolish to see them as all-encompassing solutions in the first place. You know, if you look at the likes of ERP solutions that I implemented SAP 25 years ago at one organization into a procurement function, and we believed it was going to be the solution for 90% of everything we did. And clearly it wasn't. It was great at doing certain things. Now, when you look at some of the broader solutions that are out there, they go beyond the bounds of what a traditional ERP solution did. And, you know, they have additional components to them, which are quite kind of impressive in terms of their integration and what have you. But I think when you look at the different dimensions to procurement in terms of the different challenges, different organizations and different sectors and different geographies face, there's never going to be one solution that kind of fits all. There's always going to be a requirement for some niche solutions and some different dimensions that perhaps aren't relevant to all areas. So for sure, there's been some faults. And I think what's incumbent on the CPO and other leaders within an organization is to be realistic about what the challenge is. So, and what I mean by that is, what's that longer term journey to deliver value? What's going to be the likely capital expenditure? What's going to be the annual operating cost impact of that, and what do you need to actually drive adoption and get it to be sustainably embedded within your organization?
Mm. Yeah, that adoption point is a key one, isn't it? I've seen it over many years. You you know, you've something's implemented, but then it doesn't actually get properly adopted. And a lot of that can come down to change management or user interface, whatever it is, but you've got to have people at the center of your procurement digital transformation. Otherwise, yeah, it's a waste of money if it's not adopted.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's a real challenge because at the end of the day, people can only use so many tools within their day-to-day role. And I think they find it a real challenge to pick up tools, maybe those that they use less, that are required to be used less frequently as well. Actually remembering how to use these tools and using them as and when they're required is not quite as easy as everybody might think it is.
How would you say the buyer's toolkit's evolved, say, over the last 10, 15 years, you know, what it was like then as opposed to how it is today?
Yeah. You know, I think if you look back sort of 10 years ago, you know, most organizations or reasonably competent kind of organizations had the basics of an ERP solution like SAP or Coupa or whatever it be, or the bolts onto an ERP solution in terms of procure to pay or source to pay. They had spend visibility tools. They had basic performance tracking, all that sort of stuff. Now, all of those tools are still around, but they've expanded into different areas. So I kind of think about this in two or three different dimensions. One is around keeping me trading. Another is keep us out of jail. And the third one is kind of reduce my operating costs. And, you know, if you think about tools such as active risk tracking, compliant tools such as Dow Jones and the likes. If you think about kind of supply chain visibility tools that we now get that help us with the likes of, US customs and border protection imports, which enable us to demonstrate that we don't have any forced labor within our supply chains. These tools are incredibly helpful for that, those modern challenges that we have. But quite frankly, we didn't have those challenges 10 years ago in many instances. And then for me, reduce my sort of operating costs, you know, a lot of desktops today, they have some form of workflow or automation tools. You think about things like fair markets and the like, where you have low value sourcing automation and what have you, which can be incredibly useful for taking control of that tail spend and getting some compliance and additional value out of that and actually making it a much better customer experience. So that's something I see. I think sort of in that kind of post-contract world, I think you see the contract management solutions that are out there, be it the likes of Acertus and what have you, where there's a real great set of tools out there for managing contract creation, but also starting to manage contract obligations and each policy holding each other to account for that. And then kind of related to that, very kind of a close sibling, shall we say, is the likes of supply relationship management tools. And when I talk about that, I mean actual relationship management and managing relationship on a day-to-day basis rather than just purely performance management tool set. So I think many organizations have a mix of those types of tools and many others for sure. But it is clearly a different position to what it was 10 years ago. And I think with that come some challenges, but maybe we'll talk about those later.
Okay. And where do you see tech firms going wrong in this space?
Yeah, another great question. I think in terms of procurement technology, there's some fantastic technology solutions out there to problems I've never seen before. and I kind of think that a great way of figuring out what kind of solutions people want to buy is looking what's at the top 5 or 10 challenges or opportunity lists that a CPO has or a leadership team has within a procurement function. And if their solution's not on the top 10 of those lists, then how relevant is it? You know, and don't be disappointed if you don't sell it because you're actually trying to solve something that's not that important to many organizations.
Yeah.
And so that would clearly be one point. Secondly, a lot of organizations when selling into procurement don't really get the context of procurement. They don't really understand the procurement operating model. They don't get the context and therefore don't really understand how their solution fits within the wider model. And as such, there's a tendency to sell those solutions as a panacea to all ills. And this can often switch off a lot of prospective product buyers because those product buyers don't believe they're kind of credible in terms of the claims they're making because they really don't understand the space perhaps in the way they do. We should do. Which is unfortunate because quite often some of those tech solutions are fantastic and really can really be helpful. I think the other thing I would say is buyers in this space, they like to be informed, but they tend to buy on a pull basis and probably ignore the push basis from vendors less so. Mm. And I think, you know, as a CPO that's made some pretty significant investments in procurement technology in the past, I think the way that one should think about tackling this is what, you know, the kind of first question is what's important to my business? Secondly, where I am with the maturity of my procurement function. And third, how can technology enable me to deliver what's important to my business rather than being distracted by curiosity for new solutions, which are out there, which I think is something that some teams and functions have struggled with. The other thing I would say about tech firms that we kind of get wrong is, do they really understand how decisions are made within a procurement function? Do they really get that? Do they know what the real pace is of those, that decision-making process? Do they understand how influential procurement is and what have you? And then do they know how to really get traction in terms of that sale? So that's kind of what I see, you know, got to be on the priority list, understand the context. And what I would say is understand how the decisions are made.
Brilliant. Yeah, I'd say there's definitely, with whatever it is, 4,000 solutions in the space, it's a busy marketplace. For a procurement function, they're not going to be able to scout all of those. And actually, as you say, a lot of them might not even solve key problems for them anyway. So yeah, a bit of a fool's errand to an extent.
Yeah, quite. I think it's a fascinating space, and I don't think we can continue having 4,000 or 5,000 different solutions out there. I just don't think there's a marketplace. And I think we'll see some significant changes in that space, but maybe one for later.
What tools have you seen that are particularly useful for procurement teams?
Well, thinking sort of emergent tech rather than established tech, shall we say. Mm. I think workflow, which simplifies a very complex landscape. As I was saying, you know, in the past, maybe 10 years ago, we had a handful of tools on the buyer's desktop. Now we've maybe got 10 or 20 different tools on the buyer's desktop. And that workflow and sort of can put a layer on top of the different solutions and actually make it much easier for the buyers to utilize those tools without having to learn to use all of those tools. And those workflows drive a whole load of efficiency. So I think that's one space which is super interesting. You've got workflow, I guess, I would say, from an intake perspective, tools like Zip and what have you, kind of quite interesting from that perspective. And then you've got other tools which are driving workflow within the function. So I think they're super interesting. Secondly, I think another area of super interesting. And again, I'm not sure these are all absolutely emergent, but they're not on the majority of desktops of procurement functions and are clearly growth areas. The second tool I'd kind of point out is all around sub-tier visibility. Really interesting stuff. So compliance tracking, as I said, you know, you have to be able to report if you're importing to the USA and soon into Europe and the UK, you need to be able to demonstrate you've not got forced labor within your supply chains. Sub-tier visibility tools enable you to do that, which is absolutely key given the strengthening of regulations within that space. Secondly, super interesting from a supply chain resilience. Once you understand your sub-tier design, and if you're an aerospace manufacturer or defense manufacturer and you've got a deep supply chain, maybe 5, 6, 7 tiers down, you need to, having the understanding of that supply chain, its design and its resilience can be incredibly helpful when it comes to scenario planning and mitigating risk within your supply chain. And finally, I'd say there's a whole load of commercialization opportunities in that space in terms of how you drive optimal supply chain design to deliver best commercial value. And the final one I would say, I mean, sometimes people think as if being a little bit prosaic, the final one I would say is supply relationship management. And I think that one is super interesting. You look at tools like Sapeco and those kind of tools. They're not necessarily all about performance management. They're all about how do you manage the day-to-day relations within an organization. And I think that's something which is actually super exciting, improving that efficiency and reducing some of the seams that you see between different organizations as they try and function together. So, yeah, really interesting space.
Yeah, thanks. And obviously, yeah, big fan of everything Sheldon's doing over at Sapeco. And I guess the thing for me with supplier relationship management, it's one of those things that over the years hasn't embedded as much as I guess we think it should do. You know, from an intellectual point of view, it makes sense. But then from an investment point of view, there's often a challenge there. I guess for me, the supplier base is a massive asset of any firm in the same way that your employees are also an asset as well. But we've got all the HR systems to manage the people, but we've got virtually nothing to manage the suppliers. So it just seems crazy to me, really.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think organizations have been fixated with just reporting supplier performance. And sure, that's an important dimension, both in terms of the operation and kind of contractually and all that sort of stuff. But actually having tools around us which help us drive greater innovation, you know, reduces those kind of communication barriers and, you know, clearly define the roles of the different players within the organization and, you know, make that day-to-day sort of activity between different businesses much more transparent and much more straightforward. I think that's kind of where the value is really at, quite frankly. And as you start gather all that data that kind of goes around that, it'd be fascinating to see what those kind of future insights bring.
Definitely. What skills are we missing in procurement to get digital right, do you think?
I think the one of it is that we've kind of talked about is kind of the ability to create the case to invest. I think that's super important. And I think what I would say is, kind of adding to what I've already said, is I think you've got to kind of reach for the stars. You've got to be ambitious about what the benefit is. And you need to be confident in making that case. So that's kind of the first thing. I think secondly, know how to leverage value rather than functionality. So what I mean by that is you're investing in technology because it brings new value to the organization. You're not investing in technology because it's got some great new functionality, because quite frankly, that's irrelevant. What really counts is what's the value that it's bringing to the organization in terms of compliance, resilience, sustainability, cost, cash, whatever it be that's important. So I think really figure out how you harvest that value from those investments. I think, as we touched on briefly before, I think the adoption space is challenging, and how you embed that within the organization. And I think, again, this landscape is very fragmented. And I think whatever can be done to kind of put a layer above many of these solutions kind of helps. Although that may be a number of years off for many organizations, I think you have to really work hard at the training, the reinforcing of the need to utilize the tools. And, you know, that's something you just have to work at over time until it becomes second nature. And then I think finally, I think, you know, in terms of getting digital right, I think it all comes down to leadership, quite frankly. Mm. It's the leadership team within that given function, and you know, they need to be ready to make that big step in terms of the investment. They need to be ready to drive the issues which are really critical. They need to be ready to reinforce the usage and encourage that kind of take up, and to be held to account to make sure that it delivers the benefits that you said it was going to deliver.
What's your biggest tech mistake and what did you learn?
Oh, good question. Not to think there was an appetite to invest in procurement at an exec level. So I wasn't as convinced that people was interested in it as I was. When I shared with them the business case and what it was we were doing, they were very interested. Secondly, I would say that as part of that conversation, have the belief that, you know, that if your investment materially accelerates, simplifies, kind of reduces risk, delivers more value and everything else that kind of goes with that, you will have an audience.
Hmm.
And then the third thing that I've kind of learned is, as I've said a couple of times already, shoot for the stars in terms of this. Nobody's interested whatsoever in you lowballing your investment because you won't get it. just a waste of time. Understand what the art of the possible is and shoot for that, and a little bit more as well.
Mm. And is it, I guess it's worth as well lining up with those wider business objectives or wider business programs that are going on, trying to piggyback with those. Is that the best approach there, or is it better to keep it sort of standalone?
I think it just depends. It's a great question. Say for example, the company's got a major restructuring program going on, and it's already secured significant funding for that restructuring program. If you can put your investment as part of that program, then clearly it's much easier, because it falls into that kind of restructuring approach, and you know, the conversations are much more straightforward. From time to time, you need to do it standalone. But I think if you do it standalone, you still need to have a picture of where does all this fit together. Because when you have a conversation with a CIO, you know, the CIO wants to know, you know, where does it fit in with the architecture? You know, what's the long-term view for technology in this space?
Yeah. And actually, that was the next question. So what do you see to be the future of technology and procurement? And I'm assuming that you're not going to say everything will have AI sprinkled over it in the next 6 months.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, what I would say is I don't see a landscape where we have 4,000 or 5,000 different companies. I think there's going to be a lot of mergers and acquisitions and kind of consolidation in the space. I think we'll go to a model where the products and solutions are much easier to implement and adopt and integrate into the existing landscape within an organization. I think we'll go to a model where we have more vanilla interfaces, which get away from a position where a buyer needs to learn 20 different interfaces just to do their job. I think those sort of areas I've highlighted in terms of sub-tier, in terms of work and other areas that generate real direct and attributable value to the performance of the company, they're the ones that are really going to kind of win. And I think you have to kind of focus on the process of procurement and not procurement, the function. And what I would say by that is, if you think about the real challenges in procurement, and if you think about something as basic as a sourcing process, or what's often quite basic and I guess sometimes quite complex, if you think about that process, most organizations, it takes them somewhere between 8 weeks and probably about 6 months, I would think, depending on how complex things are. The time that it takes isn't in drafting an RFP. It's not in the internals in terms of that kind of stuff. It's just within the procurement function. It's within the much bigger conversations with around the business, which are, what is it we actually really need to buy here? And that challenging conversation, that to and froing and kind of pushing on that. And then it's a challenging conversation with the potential suppliers around, you know, how could you develop that solution? What might that solution look like? And you know, those are the things that take time. It's not actually the process of, you know, getting the kind of the RFP together and all of that. It's about the discussions. And I think that's where the kind of real unlock will be in terms of accelerating procurement. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. You mentioned there sort of a cycle time, say 6 months. Would you say that's too long? Or I know it does often depend on the complexity of something you're working on.
Yeah. And that's absolutely it. You know what? If I'm buying modules for a space aircraft, 6 months is probably pretty aggressive, I suspect. Particularly if the other party has got to do some preliminary design work to be able to kind of make a quotation for it. I'll make a proposal, should I say. On the other hand, 8 weeks is probably too long for a lot of other things as well. So I think to accelerate, you need to look at the different scenarios and figure out what is it that really takes the time. And a lot of the solutions today don't focus on the what you might describe as, in project management speak, as the longest pole within the processes. I think the real trick is, how do we accelerate that? The other thing is that in that space, which says, you know, we've all worked with people that can go twice as quick as everybody else, being able to unlock their talent and be able to share that around the team in terms of how they do it will have just an equally as large impact on accelerating, I suspect.
But you're right. I think a lot of those long lead time items within the procurement process are getting the organization to the same place, getting everyone aligned before you move into that contracting phase, or you know, actually making that commitment. And actually, the people who do the best there are the ones that have exceptional soft skills, very good influencers, very good at bringing people together, communicating a vision out, and you know, resolving conflict where there will inevitably be some conflict. So that's not a tech issue. That's a, you need exceptional people in order to do that, yeah. And you need to have the right training and development to get them to that point.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're spot on there.
What are you up to now, and how can listeners contact you?
Okay, so I came back from the US in late 2022, and I've taken a sabbatical for a few months. And since that, I've been doing some advisory roles, been helping two or three tech startup companies, a bit of work with private equity. Really enjoyed that. You know, at some point I may decide to go back into a permanent CPO role. Not quite sure. We'll kind of see what kind of navigates, but I really enjoy what I do, love the space. And I just want to spend the next 4 or 5 years having an absolute blast at doing what it is I love. And if people want to kind of get hold of me, just connect with me via LinkedIn. I always kind of check my messages on that and always up for a conversation.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Jim. Really appreciate your insights.
Yeah, thanks, Rich. Take care.
Thanks for listening. Do like and share and subscribe to hear the next Procurement Conversation.